Hi, this is Jackie Neal, and I'm about to conduct another interview for the people of the Rio Grande Valley Border Towns Cyanotype Project. And hi,
Hi,
hello.
how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good.
Thank you. Are you hot after sitting in the Texas sun for 4 minutes?
Oh yeah, but I come kind of used to it already.
You are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm used to it, but I do enjoy it. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure, it's my pleasure. You and I met through the culinary scene in McAllen, Texas, and this is something that's near and dear to my heart. In fact, it is something that I really enjoy about the Rio Grande Valley. And so I think that I want to introduce our interview by saying there is a serious scene down here of talented chefs and cocktail bartenders. There's also like an amazing arts and cultural movement going on. And you were saying something about how it's just starting, it's just beginning, actually. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, actually, since I moved here from Mexico, I noticed how big this town is in the term of how many restaurants are per square mile.
How many are
There's
there?
so many restaurants, which I don't really have an exact number, but I mean every single place, every single street that you go through. In McAllen, as I mean, at least that's where I live at. That's the area that I always worked. Yeah, I
Got
see
it.
the all these restaurants, and that was good relief because that's where I come from. What I actually wanted to, I wanted to learn, I wanted to do, and I wanted to learn. Since I came here, I came with the idea of working in a restaurant. That's part of me growing up. My dad worked in restaurants his whole life. Even to the time that he was ready to retire, instead of just retiring, he put some money in this old house in downtown, in my hometown city, and he started his own restaurant.
What kind of restaurant was it?
It's just a kind of like a breakfast, very family oriented, you know, kind of place.
What did it look like?
It's beautiful now. He painted all walls in all different colors. He has plants everywhere. So it looks beautiful. It looks like a very, very cozy Mexican house.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very proud of that. And I mean, that's deeply, deeply into my personality, I guess, because I grew up my whole life seeing that. I remember as a kid going to every restaurant that my dad worked at and just wait for him to, you know, get out of his shift so we can go back home. And he will always give me, you know, some dessert or, you know, a soda or whatever while we were waiting for him. So I have a bunch of memories of that. So I basically grew up in the industry.
Yeah, that's great. I remember you telling me that when you came over, you were really specifically focusing on like the cocktail industry.
Yeah.
So you had studied it while you were in Mexico or heard about it there?
Well, the thing is that in my younger years, I started working at the first restaurant when I was 17, and I was just so amazed by the whole ambience, I guess, of the restaurants
Like
that.
what? What did you like about it? The long hours, the crabby customers,
Actually,
what?
the party more than
The
anything.
party?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I like how mu I mean how much people have fun, you
Right.
know, at the bars,
I like that
you
too,
know,
yeah.
having cocktails, listening to music, dancing, you know, engaging with older friends. And that was amazing to me, you know, like being able to work in a place that you're basically gonna get paid to go party every day. And that was my idea back then. You know,
What was back
actually,
then? How long ago was back then?
that was when I was 17, probably like
What year is that?
yeah, probably like 13 years ago.
So 2004?
Yeah.
So were you interested in the resurgence of pre-prohibition cocktails?
I had no idea.
You had no idea
what this meant.
Oh, or, so you, I kind of remember you talking about the movie cocktail.
Yes.
Were you talking with like the flaring and stuff?
Yes.
So that was the appeal?
That's the whole idea that I have, that I had of bartending, you know?
Yeah.
The guy that is going to be, you
flaring
know, flaring and doing all this show, having all the attention of the ladies, you know, because he's making all these crazy cocktails. Yeah. And that was it. I mean, that was the...
So, like, that had an appeal to you?
Yeah, because...
Man, you dudes are so easy.
I just like that idea of being, you know, a showman, you know?
Yes.
Just make something to capture people's attention.
Yeah.
And just making it fun and having fun while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so appealing to me.
Yeah.
But once I arrived here... And I applied for my first job as a bartender. I got discouraged right away because they told me, oh, okay, do you know how to make this drink? And I had no idea.
Do you remember which kind it was?
It was a Bahama Mama.
Oh, God.
Which I kind of, like, you know, mention some of the ingredients.
Yeah, what is it, like, it rum?
Just because it makes sense.
Pineapple juice.
It makes sense with...
Coconut milk.
Yeah, exactly. Just like
ice.
That. Whatever
made
sense to me, that's what I said. And the guy was like straight like,
or
no.
Wait, what? See, I don't even know what a Bahama Mama is.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Well, the guy discouraged me right away. He told me, you know what? You're not a bartender. And that stuck to me.
Sorry.
And yeah. I know. I mean, it was totally crazy for me to hear that for the first time in my first attempt to, you know, get a job.
When was that roughly? When did you come over here?
That was probably around 2008, 2009.
Sorry, I don't mean to keep giggling,
but
I keep laughing. Because that's probably from the Boston Bartender's like book, right? The Bahama Mama.
Probably, I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those, you know, famous cocktails from what? The 80s,
90s? Well, probably from like the Tiki Bar.
Right.
Scene, right? But
right. But I haven't even found any, you know, recipe for a Bahama Mama in any tiki
in a tiki manual.
Yeah,
we gotta ask Brian Miller about that.
Yeah, I don't really know where that comes from.
Brian Miller probably knows. Same with like so go ahead anyway.
Yeah, well, that stuck to me, and after that I told myself, you know what, I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna do it no matter what this person told me.
Mm-hmm.
Just now. I'm gonna learn and I actually wanna be the best bartender in this town. We'll see. And from that day on, I focus on mastering my craft. And, you know.
So hold on. Now, like, okay, I'm from New York City, where if someone wanted to be a bartender before the pre-prohibition resurgence kind of thing, they would go to like this bartending school, they would learn how to flair, they would learn all of the standard recipes that are in that little small Boston bartender book.
Right.
And they would make a lot of shitty drinks. Right. And then a lot of good drinks too, because they do have like these standards, you know, like Manhattan and whatnot. But they also have the Pink Lady, which is my drink. They have it listed with half and half in it, which is not proper. And it makes me gag. It's so bad. So when you came 2008, you got turned down at this job because they didn't think you were a bartender for not making a Bahama Mama. But then you said you wanted to learn this craft. You had to clearly find a path that led you to being this like amazing cocktail bartender. And... mixologist, if you will. I mean, everybody hates that term, but as you should, because it's been appropriated. It's been taken out of the control of the people that actually like coined it. And anyway, how did you find your way to that path? And did you find it that way immediately?
Well, the thing is that I really want to do it. I really, and especially because it was a challenge to me. First of all, because of the language barrier that at the time I didn't speak any English.
When you came in 2008, you didn't speak any English?
I didn't speak any English,
wow.
So it was kind of hard for me to find a job as a bartender, because you have to talk to your peers. You have to talk to your customers. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of the things that was making it hard for me to find a job here. So I started as a barback, and from there I saw how much I actually didn't know about bartending. So this guy just opened my eyes to see.
What guy?
The guy that
that turned you down?
Yeah, that turned me down.
He helped you?
No. He just with that fact that of telling me no, he kind of like motivated me to see, okay, what's a Bahama Mama?
Right.
What, and then from there, I found out another recipe, and then another recipe, and then another recipe. And then from there, I started like gathering all these recipes from wherever I could. I would go to bars and I'll listen to what other people order. And from there, I just start trying to learn. In my first job as a barback, I was just trying my hardest. I was listening to the conversations the bartenders will have with the customers and whatever drinks they will ask for, and try to actually learn from them. And even several occasions, I ask him, hey, can you teach me? Can you teach me how to make this drink? Can you teach me how to do that? And nobody ever wanted to teach me. So I kind of like step back, stick to my job of, cleaning the glasses, bringing ice, doing all the bar back situation thing. And I just kept watching.
So what kind of bar was it? Was it like a regular dive bar? Or
it was
like
an Irish pub, which...
In town here?
Yes.
McAllen?
It didn't have anything Irish.
I haven't found an Irish pub
yes.
at all.
So
where
is this city pub? Was not their forte. It was just the name.
And they serve Guinness or something?
Yeah, we have Guinness.
Oh, I guess that's all it takes.
The decoration was kind of Irish, if you will. I don't know. The music at the beginning, it was kind of Irish. It was just not what you expect of an Irish pub.
Okay.
I guess that's one of the reasons why it didn't last.
Oh, long. It closed?
Yeah, it closed like after probably 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
All right, so that brings you to 2010. Where are you at now, like with that?
I'm there at the Irish pub, and I'm barbacking. And after a couple of bartenders got fired for, getting drunk or, not doing their job quite well, I step up and they told me, okay, you already got this. Because they notice how quick I learn all mm-hmm. these drinks without the other bartenders teaching me. I start making drinks on the side when the bartenders weren't there or when they were busy with some other customer. I will make the drinks, and I start getting a lot of positive feedback from my customers. Like, wow, this drink is amazing! Wow, how do you make this? And at this point, I wasn't following any recipes. I basically was just playing around with my palate and my common sense. So after that, I just started getting so excited about it that I just keep doing it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that I switched jobs and I moved to this Argentinian restaurant, it was an Argentinian steakhouse owned by some people from Cancun. It was so exciting for me because it was my bar. I was the only bartender for a while.
Were you like the bar manager and everything?
Bar manager, bar back, bartender.
Right.
The beginning wasn't like that. I had a couple of people working with me, but they didn't last.
Mm-hmm.
They were
so great. You got to do inventory and
everything.
See, that's like really important.
Everything. So right. That's what helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To I guess my work ethic mm-hmm. that I brought from Mexico, that I brought from seeing my dad.
There you go.
And
that's
being in that environment mm-hmm. and just the lessons that my dad gave me as his son, not as his employee. He will, raise us on the sense of everybody has to do something around the house. Everybody has to help. Everybody has activities. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So kind of like very like restaurant oriented, if you want.
Mm-hmm. My ex-husband was a fisherman, and he always likened it to running like the ship. To everybody has a role, right. And like if one person isn't supporting the other, then the ship sinks. Right. And I thought that that was a great like analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which really makes like the ties of the people you work with very strong.
And I feel like that's what marked the difference between me and other employees, you know, mm-hmm. that I actually would do the work and would do it the best I could.
Yeah. All right, cool. I want to like get you into present day and we'll, I know you probably have to run, but so here you are, you're a cocktail bartender. Are you in charge of your bar program or are you in the ranks?
I actually was pretty much serving what was popular in Mexico.
Which here? Is, currently?
Yes, because the owners were from Mexico, so they had no idea what a cocktail was.
Right now? This place?
Oh, no, but you're talking,
I'm talking
about
right like, now, but bring it like up to date right now.
Okay, okay.
But are you in charge of the bar program or?
I am, and I just get, you know, help of the rest of my bartenders, and
yep.
Together we come with ideas,
yeah.
And we pretty much.
How frequently do you change your menu?
Every season.
Every season.
We try to bring some new cocktails, some new flavors every 3 months.
For the cocktailians that are going to listen to this, I want to know what your recipe is for the Jerry, what is it called?
The Jerry Lee?
Yeah, that's good. That's kind of my favorite.
Okay, cool.
So what's your proportions and your recipe?
Well, on this cocktail, what happened is that one of my reps, she came with this bottle of peach whiskey.
Oh, right. That has peach in it, yep.
Which I was, like, very kind of, like, against of because I didn't want to use anything that was already flavored.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to use fresh ingredients,
mm-hmm.
you know, my own resources to infuse or mm-hmm. flavor my spirits.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. These people, they're being so nice to me and to our business, but very supportive, that once I saw that she pulled out this bottle, I tried and I was like, you know what, this actually tastes pretty, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I can do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
So right away I started making this cocktail, I put it together and I made it for her and she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see her eyes, you know,
light up.
Mm-hmm. Light up. And that's what I want when
mm-hmm.
I make a cocktail. That's the kind of reaction
mm-hmm.
that I expect from every person when I make a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always said it, and I say it to my other bartenders every time, that's the best tip I can get, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's the best tip
mm-hmm.
I can get. I don't care about the money.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell them the money is a result of a job well done.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make sure that that person is having an amazing experience,
mm-hmm.
the money is going to be there. I mean, that's something you should not be worrying about.
Mm-hmm.
How much money you're going to
mm-hmm.
make with this person. Focus on how am I going to create an amazing experience for this person, this girl, this guy.
Right.
So that's kind of how that.
What's the recipe, though? Are you not going to tell me?
No.
Tell
absolutely.
Me at least the ingredients.
Absolutely. It's just a basic sour, you know,
mm-hmm.
base ingredient. I just use peach whiskey, 1.5 ounces,
mm-hmm.
with 3/4 ounce of fresh lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
Just 1/4 ounce of rich simple syrup, egg white, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you shake it with?
I just dry shake it first
mm-hmm.
for a good, I'm going to say 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to add the bigger pieces of ice that I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And then I shake it for another,
Do you guys
seconds.
Have the ice block? I didn't see that while I was there.
What we do is that we actually buy 12-pound blocks
mm-hmm.
and we cut them.
Mm-hmm.
By hand
mm-hmm.
and we make our cubes
mm-hmm.
For, you know, old fashions or anything that goes on the rocks, we use that ice.
You don't shake with it, though?
Yes. Whatever piece is not big enough or not the shape that it requires, you know, for drinks, I use that ice. Yeah. Every time that I get a chance.
You have, do you have a cold and draft I think, on order or what?
Yes.
You
I
do?
And I wanted to tell you about that as soon as I saw you because...
I told you how we were like machine, the only one in Brooklyn that had cold draft.
Our
like,
machine
people
broke
come on
down. Our brushing, our machine is, you know, giving us trouble.
I see.
Already, you know. The, we don't know if it's the compressor or whatever it is.
Wait, you're cold. You have a cold draft.
No, we don't have a cold draft yet. So that's when I saw the opportunity to bring it to my boss.
I told him,
you know what? This is what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
Check this out.
Yeah.
I gave him the link for the website. I told him, check out the video where I think Del DeGroff comes out talking about it. And he was, wow, this is super cool.
Great. And, that's great.
And then I told him, this also comes if you want to pay a little extra, it comes with a crusher. So,
so
we can actually have both.
Ice.
You use the crushed ice in the kitchen all the time. And you have to use this blender and it takes forever.
That's for like the oysters or something,
for the
right?
oysters.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I told him, this is an ice that we both are going to use. And it's just going to, you know, raise the quality of our drinks and, our, you know, in the presentation, it's just kind of look amazing. And just imagine stirring a cocktail with this.
Have you ever
ice.
Shaken with cold draft yet?
No.
It
I never
like I've done it, and I like think I threw out my my shoulder.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it gets really cold.
Yeah.
It gets really cold, and like you like the most satisfying thing at a cocktail bar is
hearing the sound of the
tins
yes.
split, and I can never split it. I gave up like after like a day.
Actually, that's one thing that always upset me of whenever I'm shaking a cocktail right now.
Yeah. It's a dilution.
The dilution. I'm hearing that ice basically,
know.
You know,
melt away.
It sounds like a maraca. It sounds horrible. It's like,
it's horrible.
You hear that
it's
ice
just that you know what it should
in
sound like.
So many tiny pieces that you're like, that's not the dilution that I want.
I know,
I want,
but you
I
know what? I mean,
ice.
it is a challenge, but you've done well with it, you know. That's my opinion. So let's just talk about your experience in coming over from Mexico. How is that going?
Well, that was pretty interesting. After I kind of decided that I wanted to come to the United States was because I was very over my life in Mexico. The friends that I was hanging out with, my lack of interest in school, and actually I was studying something amazing that I love also, which was graphic design. And since I was a little kid, I loved painting and I loved drawing. So I was always very artistic. I don't know, for some reason I just lost interest, or I didn't like the way I was going and the people that I was hanging out with. I thought they were not giving me, I don't know, any motivation, not that I needed from them, but I don't know, just the environment that I was surrounded.
You weren't stimulated or something?
I wasn't stimulated at all.
Right.
And just the thought of moving to another country was so appealing to me that I could get out of my head. So that's when I decided, I told my parents, you know what, I'm going to leave school and I'm going to move to the U.S. And at the beginning they were like, what? You don't even speak English. How are you going to do this? And I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like I have to do it. I have to be away from my family for once, to really see how it is to, you know, be autosufficient, I guess, or, you know,
self-sufficient.
Self-sufficient, yeah, that's what I meant to say. So I decided to do it, and they just gave me their blessing, and
How far away is your town from McAllen?
it's not too far. It's about 8 hours south.
That's pretty far. What are you talking about? That's far.
Well, it's because I heard a lot of people that comes from Mexico City, or that comes
Right,
from
Mexico City is
Oaxaca
what,
or
15 hours?
whatever, Veracruz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you this question, then I'll lead to another question, and that's, can you return to Mexico?
Right now, I'm just waiting for my status to be resolved. I
What's your
mean,
status?
I am a permanent resident with a condition.
With a condition.
Yeah. So I need
And
to remove that condition in order to go back to Mexico.
how did, so when you crossed over, you didn't speak English, but you managed to get permanent residency. Is there any trick to
The
that?
yeah, well, the thing that I did that obviously a lot of people do is that I use my tourist visa. That's the way I
Okay, so you had
enter.
a tourist
Oh
visa.
yeah, I mean, me and my family were been coming to the United States,
You would
you
go a
know,
lot?
for yeah,
Oh,
for
good.
vacation, especially here in McAllen, because my dad work at some point he worked in Reynosa and McAllen. He'll cross every day, you know. He will have two jobs, one in Reynosa, one in McAllen. So I remember the four, I think it was one summer that I came to visit him, and I stayed for a couple months, and I will come, you know, do some shopping, go back, stay in his
So
apartment.
you got a taste of McAllen and
Yeah, I
you
got a
like
taste of
it.
McAllen, and not just McAllen. I had a taste of the United States way before. The first time that I can recall it was when I went to visit some family in San Francisco.
Oh, I see.
And that was probably when I was 9. And that was it. I mean, that made me feel like, wow, this is amazing, and
So
this.
you already knew that you really didn't need to speak English over here. Because this is I one thing that's really startling to me when I came here was that it's 99.9% Hispanic.
Yeah.
And
That's
people
exact.
were actually surprised that I don't speak any Spanish.
Yeah. Actually,
And
that was the reason why I chose McAllen, because I knew
easy transition
it was
into it,
gonna
yeah.
be an easy transition. At least everybody there speaks Spanish.
Everybody
Even
speaks
though at the
Spanish.
beginning it seemed so hard to me because nobody wanted to speak Spanish to me, and
No,
especially at
really? Nobody
yeah.
wants to speak Spanish?
In at least in some of the jobs that I work
Ah, I
at,
see. Okay.
they
Yeah.
kind of like saw me sometimes as a threat, I feel,
Why?
because I was such a hardworking person, and they weren't. They would be like, you're gonna get me fired, or you're
That is not
gonna.
the first time I've heard that.
It's not?
No, it
Yeah.
seems like that's pretty common. If you
Yeah.
work really hard, you suddenly are a threat, and then that
Yes.
becomes uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And like,
And what is weird is that most of the time, or I want to say all the time, it was by Hispanic people. It wasn't not. Actually,
that's so interesting.
The nicest people that I met here were Americans.
But you mean like people that are Hispanic and United States citizens?
Some of them, but mostly like white people. They were
I know,
like,
I don't see any white people around.
but whenever I had a boss that was white, or they will see my potential right away,
Okay, I see.
and they'll be like, okay, this kid is good. I'm gonna take him under my wing, and I'm gonna explain how to do these things. And they were very patient to me on the fact that I didn't speak any English back then. And as I say, whenever I got like bad vibes, it was mostly from other Hispanic people.
Did you notice it was like any sort of like generational thing? Like, was it an older generational thing? Was it like second generation Mexican American type of thing? You
To
wouldn't
be
know?
honest with you, I never knew exactly what was the deal with them personally. Like,
Yeah,
if you're a second generation, or whatever.
You seem like the type that's like probably wouldn't ask.
No,
and just be
exactly.
Like, you know,
no. Yeah.
I'm gonna work hard
yeah,
no matter what.
That was my thought the whole time. You know, I'm gonna stay out of trouble and I'm just gonna focus on doing my job and learning.
So the thing that I was gonna ask you that asking you whether you can go back or forth would lead to, and that is this: can you go to Oaxaca to Mezcal, see like the Mezcal?
I'm actually already planning a trip over there. But
right.
As soon as this gets resolved with my my status here, I'm gonna do it.
Cool.
The thing is that I got stopped because I had to, for a while I didn't have a job or I was struggling with money. So the time that I had to actually, you know, put in my application for to remove that condition, I didn't do it. Or I didn't do it in time. So right now I'm in this situation that I cannot go back to Mexico. Before that happened, I was going back and forth all the time.
Were you?
I was visiting my family.
How long have you been dealing with the condition?
Probably like 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was because I was doing great. I was doing great here. I was already like starting to pick up the language. I was making great money. But then out of a sudden, this guy came and he offered me a job in a speakeasy bar.
Like a real speakeasy, not...
Well,
not the
least,
one that has the sign on it that says speakeasy.
Right. At least the whole structure and, you know, the theme and the vibe was totally there.
Yeah.
And I was amazed by it. And so almost right away, almost didn't give it any thought. And I just quit my current job. And then I moved to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that, wow, this is what I was hoping for. This is what I wanted. This is what I've been reading about. And, you know, this is exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I started amazing. I started awesome. I was making all these crazy cocktails that people were loving. And then I start having trouble getting paid.
Oh,
this
shit.
Person start telling me, you know what, right now we're paying taxes on this, we're doing these other things, you know, we're not getting that much business as we hope, and the I don't know, a bunch of excuses.
What? With your tips should be paying you.
Oh,
they would take your tips?
No, I was
oh, okay.
Basically relying on my tips most of the time. But then after a while, even my tips were hold because of bank transactions or these, so many excuses.
No.
So that made it super hard for me. And then at that same time, my wife got an accident. And she had knee surgery. So that at that time, everything started piling up.
Yeah.
You know, I started getting like behind on rent, behind on my bills. So just a bunch of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what caused for me to not follow with my requirements of removing the condition of my immigration status. But then, after I finally quit that job, I start, you know, going around trying to, you know, find a place to give me stability and, you know, go back on my feet. And I finally found a good place. I worked hard and, you know, I started being fine again.
That's good.
And
now
I'm really, like, taking care of all the...
How long do you think it's going to take before?
Hopefully 2 more months.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
After four
years?
So
I'm very excited.
That's awesome.
I'm very excited because there's...
I'm going to knock on wood right now.
Yeah. So because there's nothing more that I want right now than going back to Mexico. Visit Oaxaca. Visit my sister in Guadalajara. Visit the town of Tequila.
Mm-hmm.
And actually bringing all this excitement that I have now for my national spirits and actually go deep, go there, go feel the soil, go talk to the people, go have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super excited about it.
That's
so
awesome.
After that, I think everything's gonna change for me.
Yeah. So what do you think the future holds for you? What do you have in mind?
Well, I just think it's gonna be awesome. I honestly think it's gonna be awesome because I never lost the hope. I never lost the enthusiasm for getting better. And I think this is gonna take me somewhere special, somewhere amazing, especially because every time I meet great people, new people, and I get all these doors start open for
That's
me.
what I said about when I came to Bodega, and I was just like, it's amazing the doors that being in the culinary industry
Yeah,
open. And
exactly.
it's not what you would think. It's not like to another kitchen. It's into this whole cultural world. And I'm fortunate to have had been part of it, but because I was part of it, it still continues to connect me. I mean, you and I connected basically off all I had to say. I was like, "Do you happen to have that Death and Company cocktail book? I'm in it. I'm the pink lady." And then it was history, and it made my entire residency what it is. I mean, like that interaction.
Yeah, and that's how I feel, and that's why I have such a deep connection, and a profound love for the industry. Because at the beginning, okay, it was for fun. I was young, and all I can think about it was partying all the time and stuff. But as I grew up and I work more, I understood that there's something special about the industry. The connection that you make with other people is what make me, love it.
Okay, so if this was the last conversation you and I were to ever have, is there anything you want me to know or you want to say?
Well, the only thing is that I'm very, very happy to have met you. It's been an honor, and I kind of the idea of seeing you again, probably
Yeah.
visit you, I don't know,
I really hope you
bumming to
do.
you over there in New York, or I don't know. I feel like the future has a lot of possibilities for me, and I'm sure I'm gonna be traveling and visiting all kinds of amazing bars and amazing cities. So probably one of those days I bump into you again.
Yeah, I hope so. I've already
Yeah.
drawn up a map for Mars.
Cool.
So, yeah, I mean, you better get in touch with me if you come to
Yeah,
New
of
York
course,
City.
absolutely. That'd be great.
Well, thank you so much for your interview. This is the point where I ask if you'd like to tell me your name or remain anonymous.
I'll prefer to remain anonymous.
Okay, and thank you so much, but may I have your permission to put the audio online, even though you're anonymous?
Yeah,
Okay.
for sure.
All right, let me press stop.